You're listening to a DM podcast.
You know, the panic button was nearly about to be pressed, and you're in the middle of nowhere and you don't know what to expect. And I always try and keep a cool, calm demeanor, but there was this small part of me that was thinking that Dave's going to have to pull some strings, and he's going to be delivering our baby in the middle of nowhere.
The center north station of the child air flight on 458, King Air.
Still breathing okay at the moment.
Is it a big toughity?
That blood pressure is not coming up.
493, understood, thank you.
Hi, my name is Lana Mitchell from the Royal Flying Doctor Service. This is a podcast about life in the bush, mateship, courage, and the role that the Royal Flying Doctor Service plays in serving rural and remote communities. This is the Flying Doctor Podcast.
My name is Kira Lee Dargan from the Royal Flying Doctor Service, and I'm an Aboriginal woman of the Wiradjuri Nation. This podcast has been recorded on Ngunnawal land and is being broadcast across all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations. We at the Royal Flying Doctor Service want to acknowledge elders, past and present. The RFDS recognises that this is First Peoples land and always will be.
I had my first child almost 18 years ago now, but the worry and stress leading up to that first birth is something I can't easily forget. My labour started on the Friday night and baby did not arrive until late Sunday evening, with scant sleep in between. My lack of sleep made me even more tense, and that too delayed baby's arrival. But he did eventually come into the world, healthy and loud. I was lucky as I was well cared for in my regional hospital, which has a great reputation in birthing and a lovely team of caring staff. But imagine if you were 35 weeks pregnant with your first baby and driving for work in remote Western Australia. Your waters break and labour starts. You are hundreds of kilometres from a doctor and thousands from a tertiary hospital. Ella and Dave had this very experience. Hello, Ella.
Hi, good morning.
Before we get into this challenge or this experience that happened quite recently, I just want to check, how is new mum and lovely bub doing at the moment? Because this is all just quite recent.
It is. We're doing great. Lucas is a little adventurer. He's a happy little thing. And thankfully so far he's sleeping well, and he just fits right in with our busy work schedule. And he's great. Dad's great. We're all doing well.
Okay, good. So you and Dave live in Perth, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we bounce between Perth and Kalgoorlie for work purposes, yes.
Okay, have you always lived there?
I've always lived in Perth my entire life. So I've grown up with a family of five, my older brother and younger brother, and that's where we've remained.
Now, your husband, Dave, has also been a Perth boy for the longest time as well, right?
Absolutely. He's also grown up in Perth. We did venture out bush, obviously, in separate ways. My dad was a geologist, or as I called it as a young child, a treasure hunter, because I didn't quite understand the term geologist. And so Dad used to take us out bush all the time growing up. They were sort of our family holidays, heading out to Kalgoorlie to go hit some rocks with Dad. And Dave, he also grew up in Perth, but he ventured out bush for work purposes, and that's where we met.
Mm. Now, would you tell me a little bit about the family business that Dave has created, because it's quite long running and it's quite a niche industry. So tell me, what is the business?
So DMB Transport Works, Dave started just over 20 years ago. And since then, so it's transport engineering, and he tries to keep everything in-house. He's such an incredible person and such a hard worker. I've never met anyone quite like him. He's definitely a different kettle of fish. And amongst DMB Transport Works, maybe about 8 years ago, he started KTE Mining Services. So we ventured into the drilling exploration realm as well. So, and that's where we actually met. I was a field hand, and Dave was a driller, or drilling out on one of the jobs. And since then, you know, we've been sort of inseparable.
Look, I've actually done quite a few interviews with mining, with people that have caught the mining bug. Did you and Dave find anything in your mining explorations, opal or gold or precious gemstones, or anything that you found, or no?
Oh, look, there's definitely been traces of gold in some of the samples that have come out from the ground, but nothing substantial. I'm still looking for that golden nugget, you know, that big one that you're going to take home and it's going to be in a whole other adventure and story, but nothing huge just yet.
Right. So Dave's business at the moment is really around transporting temporary accommodation. Like, how is that done? Because they're quite substantive, aren't they?
We do transport, and we also build trucks and trailers. We do our own spray painting. We do our own sandblasting. Like, wow. Everything is in this. We've built our own drill rigs. So in the last 5 years, we've built 3 RC rigs ourselves with our team, obviously. And so it's super, super busy, especially during the COVID spiel. It's been nonstop, and we've, you know, dabbled in everything and been in each other's pockets 24/7. You know, we've been doing 16, 17 hour days. It's been hectic, yeah, but it's been great.
Do you have an engineering bend as well? Like, or do you end up being the dog's body that just does anything and everything that's needed?
Yeah, I'm Dave's TA. I'm the try anything. And but Dave is definitely the engineer, the MacGyver of everything, and you will make anything work if you can. And he does. He does make anything work.
Mm, okay. Tell me about the mining companies that you provide service to. So when there's temporary accommodation that has to be transported, how is that done, and what does it all look like?
So in terms of mining or drilling exploration, there's so much involved, and we tend to do the jobs that a lot of people won't do these days. So we're the small business that does the camping jobs. So we'll do the hard yards. A lot of people, I think we're very blessed these days with glamping, as they call it, and you know, people have toilets and shower facilities, and we tend to do the jobs that don't have those. So we'll go out. One of our jobs consisted of camping for 2 months during winter with just the 3 of us. And we have one of these trailers that has an outdoor shower. So it can be very cold. Although in saying that, we managed to put an electric blanket in our swag. So for 2 months, we're basically sleeping in a swag, and, you know, rain, hail or shine, you go out and you drill. It doesn't matter if your hands are cold or you can't feel them. You go out and you get the job done. And Dave's very great in the fact that we'll never ring anyone for help. He'll stay out there for 2 months, and we'll be right on our own, and we'll just get the job done.
Wow. Okay. All right. So you fell pregnant. How were your first trimester and second trimester?
Of course, it was super exciting. We had been trying for quite some time and thought we were going to have to do the IVF route. However, things fell into place and I fell pregnant. And I remember telling Dave at work, and he just looked at me and I said, I think I'm pregnant. And he just smiled at me, gave me this big grin, and then walked off. And I thought, okay, where do we go from this? But, yeah, from there, we sort of kept things under wraps for quite some time. I didn't want anybody to treat me differently while at work. And, you know, I still wanted to work and I didn't feel any different, and didn't want people to treat me different if they knew that I was pregnant. So it was quite some time that people didn't know. Obviously, our parents knew, and it was very, very, very exciting.
You got to a point of being 30, 31, 32, 33 weeks pregnant. What was your birth plan?
So the plan was to have the baby in Perth, natural if possible. I mean, we sort of were winging it.
Okay, so tell me now, there was a last-minute decision to make just one more trip to Kimberley. What was the job that had you decide at 35 weeks, oh, you know, I'll just do this last trip? What was the work that was that compelling?
That's right. So it's coming up to Christmas, and it sort of can be a busy time of year. And a friend of ours had some accommodation up in Kununurra that he wanted to be brought back before Christmas, and obviously when the wet season starts. So we were on a bit of a time constraint, and we thought, oh, you know, we'll just get this one last job in before Christmas. And we'd just come back from the Tanami where we'd been drilling and bought some more accommodation back. So we're trying to sort of hit two birds with one stone. So we'd done the trip And we knew what we were in for. We just didn't expect my waters to break.
So this is a long trip. So you, just for those who are not familiar with where Kununurra is, we're talking several thousand kilometres from Perth. So how long does it take to drive from where you live in Perth with the truck and so forth up to Kununurra?
It takes a fairly long time. So from Perth to Port Hedland, which is the first sort of stint, if you're going non-stop, that's 18 hours, roughly 18 hours, probably a little bit longer in a truck. We both have our truck license, so we tend to hotshot together. So Dave would do most of the driving, especially while I was being pregnant, and I'd sort of fill in when he needed a sleep. Yeah. But it's a fairly long haul and not much out there, although I think there were some bushfires happening at the time as well. So literally at night time, you just see this glow of orange as you're travelling on the main highway, and it's really quite strange when you're out bush, because you think of Perth and if there's a fire, you know, the fire brigade is straight onto it and they're putting the fire out, whereas out bush they just tend to let it burn. And so at night time it's quite incredible. You just see this orange glow just in the horizon, and it's the bushfires, no sunlight at all. It's quite incredible. So you see all sorts of things at night time. During the daytime, we listen to a lot of podcasts to buy the time, and we're making our way up, and so we've done Perth to Port Hedland and then started travelling inland. And I don't know if many people know, but the Tanami is quite unforgiving, and we always say the Tanami always has a victim, whether it's a tyre that it takes, or literally a few months prior, our aircon went in the truck. So for 2 days straight, we were going back and forth from Halls Creek to Roebuck and back and forth and back and forth. And we had to go into Port Hedland to get the aircon fixed, because it's, you know, scorching hot, over 40 degrees, and just steaming hot in the truck. We had the windows down just to get some kind of relief of hot air blowing on us. And there's all sorts of things. There's always a victim near the Tanami.
So it's Christmas. You've driven all the way up to Port Hedland. Now, had Dave done most of the driving up until that point?
Yeah, no, Dave had done all the driving up until that point, and it was sort of getting into the evening, about 11:30 at night. We're just out of Halls Creek, and we're both absolutely knackered. And I sort of feel like I have this responsibility when Dave's driving to keep him awake and, you know, keep chatting and all the rest of it. So we both pulled over and we thought, oh, we'll have an hour kip and then we'll keep going. I'll keep on driving. And we went to jump into the bed in the back of the truck, and all of a sudden I sort of felt this gush, and I sort of looked at Dave and I said, this doesn't feel right. And we both looked at each other and thought, surely this can't be it. And because it just kept coming out in small amounts. Nobody tells you what your water breaking is going to be like. And I remember trying to ask questions, you know, what to expect, but it doesn't all come out in one go sometimes. So I was thinking, there was a small part of me thinking that this isn't it, but then it just kept coming and kept coming. And so we both looked at each other, and I looked at Dave and I said, look, you sleep, I'll jump in the truck and we'll just keep driving up to Kununurra, which I think was about only 3 hours away, but you're in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of the night. You're just thinking, please don't get a flat tire. Please don't hit a roo. Please don't hit a cow. Do we just need to get there?
Were you worried at that point? Like you're a new mum, you know what I mean? Never done this before. Was it freaking you out?
There's a small part in my brain which was, you know, the panic button was nearly about to be pressed, and you're in the middle of nowhere and you don't know what to expect. And I always try and keep a cool, calm demeanor, but there was this small part of me that was thinking that Dave's going to have to pull some strings, and he's going to be delivering our baby in the middle of nowhere.
That 2 hours or 2.5 hours that you're driving, did Dave actually sleep? I mean, I don't know that I could do that if I was the husband. I don't think I could do that.
He did. He was absolutely pooped, and he slept like a baby. And the whole time I was so alert. I was so knackered before my waters broke, but as soon as they broke, you know, your mind just starts churning and churning.
It's just adrenaline, absolute adrenaline.
Pretty much just awake on adrenaline and thinking what if, or what could happen. and trying to play out the scenario in your head.
What were you listening to? Were you listening to something to try to keep you awake? You were listening to podcasts or music?
Yeah, Luke Combs, country music. Luke Combs has been a godsend. And actually on the way back, Luke Combs was playing on repeat. So he was quite calming and, you know, helping the thought process of how it's all going to unravel.
Country music can be a little bit, you know, my wife left me, my dog's gone, you know. Do you know what I mean? It can be a bit morose. So you just found it relaxing. And
yeah, no, it was very relaxing. And there was that Luke Combs came up on probably halfway through the drive, but for the first half I just wanted Dave to sleep, and I was just like I said, my thoughts churning about the possibilities of what could happen. And to be fair, I actually didn't even do any of the prenatal courses or anything. I actually had no idea what to expect. And because we've been so busy with work, I hadn't even done a research on the internet or I was so unprepared. And I didn't even have anything with me.
Ignorance is bliss, maybe.
Well, just see, you know, my motto, it will all work out in the end. And thankfully it did, but I sort of didn't really know what I was getting into.
did your labour actually start while you were driving? Like, were you in pain?
No. So my waters, usually you go into labour and then your water breaks. So mine was a little bit backwards, and I didn't even know this till the midwife told me. But so my water broke, and then I went into labour.
Well, I'm glad you weren't actually in labour while you were driving, because it can be very painful. So
yes,
I can't imagine trying to manage a large truck and manage pain at the same time. I don't think I could have done it.
As I mentioned earlier, this podcast has been made possible with the support of Isuzu Ute Australia. Having reliable vehicles is imperative in the harsh Australian outback, and Isuzu have provided D-Max Utes and MUX SUVs to pull 7 large RFDS flight simulators as they engage in school, community and field day activities for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. These simulators are full-size planes, minus the wings, and the Isuzu D-Max and MUX vehicles are a perfect match for the long-distance heavy towing demands of these RFDS simulators right across Australia. So keep an eye out for them as they travel around each state, and we would love to see photos and locations on our Flying Doctor podcast community Facebook page when you see them.
So could you describe Kununurra as you're driving in? So you're in this large truck. Are you towing or bringing anything on the truck, or is the truck empty and just coming up to move things?
Yeah, so we had an empty, as they call it, bobtailing, and so no trailers on the back because we were obviously going to collect them. And it was a very humid night. As we came up to the Kununurra sign to turn right, I pulled over and I woke Dave up and said, oh, look, you know, we're not too far away now. Readjusted myself, put another towel on the seat, and, you know, got out for a quick wee as well, because obviously I didn't think we were going to have time once we got into Kununurra. Had a little bit of a stretch, and I don't know, this pre before you go into chaos, I think the calm before the storm.
Yeah.
And away we went.
So, okay, so did Dave take over driving or did you keep driving?
No, I kept driving. So Dave did ask, he goes, do you want me to keep on driving? I said, no, you rest. I think I just needed something to keep me busy to avoid, you know, the negative thoughts.
I got to know, so you drive up to the Kununurra Hospital. Do you, like, where do you park the truck? And then do you waddle all the way in and say, oh, listen, like, what happened?
Well, Kununurra at 3 a.m. in the morning is a very quiet and deserted town. And as we came up to the hospital, I was thinking, where the hell am I going to park? And so we parked on the road, because that's about the only place that we could park, being in the prime mover. So even though we're bobtailing, it's still very hard to park. And I didn't really know what I was in for. And I sort of jumped out and took a big, deep breath, and I thought, how am I going to go in with these saturated shorts? And I was trying to search for something else, but I thought in the end, you know, there's no point. We just got to go. And Kununurra Hospital was absolutely dead at that time of night. And as we walked up, it was a slight glow of lights. No one was around, and I just pressed the emergency button on the hospital door and waited for a nurse to come. And a nurse eventually came a couple of minutes later. And at this point, I wasn't sure if I was about to cry tears of happiness, or I did get a little bit emotional because we'd finally arrived and I wasn't sure what was going to happen, the fear of the unknown.
A little bit stressful.
Yeah, a little bit, and we'd made it, and it was this overwhelming feeling of okay, we're here now, what next? And the nurse opened up the doors and I just remember saying, I think my waters have broke. And she looked down at me and she goes, yep, come on in. And that was it. She just, you know, the team there were amazing. They took us in, and I remember Dave laying down on the hospital bed because I was in the bathroom, you know, with gushing water coming out. And I thought, you know, you have another little sleep again. But the staff there were amazing. And then they said, you know, look, you're 35 weeks, so 5 weeks premature. They woke up the doctor in Kununurra, and he got himself out of bed and came in and assessed the situation and said, look, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to deliver your baby here.
Did you have any idea of, I mean, because little regional hospitals like Kununurra, they're just not set up to do anything that's even mildly risky. So did you think as you walked into that Kununurra hospital, okay, great, I'm going to walk out with my baby? Or did you think, oh, boy, I have no idea what happens next?
Yeah, I did think Kununurra was going to be it. You know what? I said Kununurra is better than Halls Creek. As I thought, if we're going to have a baby anywhere, Kununurra is probably the better spot. And we've been to Kununurra before, and it's quite a beautiful town, a little bit tropical. And I thought, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. And it might be a bit of a forced break for Dave as well. You know, we'll have a baby in peace and quiet, but and you know, but it didn't stop there. There was going to be a whole other adventure to the story.
So what did the doctor say when the doctor was woken up and brought in to have a look at you at 3 o'clock in the morning? What did he say when he examined you?
He said, well, they were sort of preparing me for birth there. And so in my frame of mind, I'm preparing myself to give birth in Kununurra. And then it sort of changed in a split second. And he said, look, unfortunately, we can't deliver your baby here. It's going to have to be in Broome. And I'm thinking, geez, Broome's 16 hours away. How are we going to get there? Because once your water breaks, I never knew this, you've got a sort of 48-hour period before things start to get a little testy, and you know, baby really needs to come out, otherwise infection could happen. So we're on a bit of a time constraint there, and weren't sure how it was all going to roll out. But the RFDS came to the party and flew myself. They did offer actually to fly Dave, but he thought he'd better bring the truck on down.
He's thinking,
he was in for another 16-hour drive all the way back to Broome.
Yeah, he's thinking, well, if I leave the truck behind, how on earth am I going to come back and pick it up afterwards?
Exactly.
It's a dedicated truck driver right there.
He is a machine.
So, okay, so 3 o'clock in the morning, you end up being, I presume, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. At what point do you actually end up on a plane and flying to Broome?
I think the RFDS arrived at 8:30 on the dot, and it all happened so quickly. Dave actually left a couple of hours prior. He thought, you know, I want to make it for the birth. So we sort of made up this plan in our heads, and he said, right, we'll stick to it. I'll get the truck. I'll get going. I'll see you in Broome. So I was on my own, and Dave was on his own. He was obviously really tired and had this huge haul ahead of him, bobtailing it again. And actually, no, I think he picked up some accommodation while he was there and drove that back to Broome.
Oh, my gosh. That's dedication for you.
Yeah, no, so he actually took one of the accommodations and took it back with him. He thought, you know, we'll make
Here's
this worth our while.
That's okay. And, I've got time. I'll load it up.
So he loaded up some accommodation and off he went. And so I was on my own for a couple of hours. And in that couple of hours, I was thinking, don't I tell Mum and Dad what's going on? Because actually before we left, I didn't really tell Mum and Dad that we were going all the way up to Kununurra. And I'd actually only told my obstetrician that we were going to Kalgoorlie, not Kununurra.
just for listeners who are not aware of the difference between Kalgoorlie and Kununurra. So how far is Kalgoorlie from Perth?
So Kalgoorlie's 6 hours.
Right.
Yeah, that's a drive in the park for us. But Kununurra is basically at the top of WA and probably, you know, a couple of days drive in normal time.
So you justified the whole way. Well, my obstetrician said, I'm fine to go to Kalgoorlie. I'll go to Kununurra, which is easily four times the distance.
Actually, one of the nurses in Kununurra actually worked with my obstetrician. And I said, oh, please don't tell him what I've done. He told me this would happen. Oh, so, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Do you remember the RFDS flight? Do you remember at 8:30 in the morning getting onto the plane? And what do you remember of that?
Very vividly. Janet was an absolutely incredible and beautiful human being, and she made me feel so nice. So they had another trainee there, and the pilot, he was awesome as well. And I just remember being rolled out, and I was thinking, I probably don't need to be rolled out in this bed. I can walk, but they didn't let me do anything. And I remember Janet getting someone to take a picture, you know, with the two thumbs up just before we got on the plane. And I was thinking, oh, here we go. And the plane ride was only an hour, but it went so quickly. And you know, again, the thought process of how did we get to this? Because I was thinking we're going to do this trip, make it back in Perth in time, and actually get some baby things prepared. But I was thinking, yeah, we just don't have anything prepared. So I'm prepared for this moment, but just trying to adapt to it and deal with it all.
Mm. Have you ever been on a small plane like that before?
A helicopter. A couple of months prior, Dad and I were doing some chopper sampling at 7 months pregnant. But never been on a small plane like that. So it's definitely a little bit different and a lot louder. Obviously, lucky I don't get claustrophobic, but Janet was sat next to me the whole time and telling me about how she does transport work as well with her partner and all about her tales. And it was definitely very calming being on the flight. And then, you know, as we're coming down into Broome, you know, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. And obviously with people giving birth, sometimes, you know, labour can happen quite quickly and the bub comes out real fast. And I was hoping for a natural birth, but it was another basically 2 days later and I was induced and then had an emergency C-section for Lucas to come out. So he wanted to come out, but then he didn't want to come out.
So that means that Dave had plenty of time to get there and to be present?
Absolutely. So he made it the following evening at 9:30 at night. So, and again, he had trouble parking the truck. It was a big joke going around the hospital with his truck parked out the front. So it's Dave actually ended up hiring a bike to get around in Broome and get some, you know, essential items before Bubba arrived.
He must have been pretty tired by the time he was there. Did he just sort of camp by your bed and sleep and say, wake me up when Lucas decides to show up?
We got a hotel the first night for him. Definitely felt a little bit alone that night. And then he came in first thing the next morning with coffees and, you know, not really knowing what to expect. And we're in this, they had these brand new rooms in the Broome Hospital for delivering babies and, you know, had this big bath for water births and these big murals outside. It was a really beautiful room and we were very lucky to be in there to start.
Did your parents freak out when you finally called them and said, by the way, I'm in Broome and I'm in hospital and my waters are broken? And yeah, did they make the trip up there or did they say, we'll see you when you get down?
Oh my gosh, did my mum want to fly up straight away? She wanted to be there. But she, at the same time, she thought, you know what, this has all panned out the way it has. But her initial response, I didn't know whether to call or text, so I went with a text. That's the safe thing to do. And because mum and dad didn't know that we'd done this trip, because I didn't want them to worry. I thought, you know, we've got this, you know, we've got each other, we're a good team. and whatever happens, you know, we make it work. So from Kununurra, I sent Mum a text and I said, I can't remember what I said, but I said, just to let you know, my waters have broke. And Mum doesn't usually get up till a little bit later in the morning, but I got a text almost instantly back, the WTF in capitals. And my mum doesn't swear. So she called instantly and I said, oh, look.
By the way, I'm nowhere close to home.
Yeah, nowhere close to home. And I think I told her I was already in Broome. I didn't tell her that I was flown from Kununurra to Broome because I just didn't want her to worry. So, but eventually it all came out. She goes, oh, you little shit. What were you thinking? So, everyone was quite surprised and Mum was awesome and Dave's mum was awesome. They just said, we can be there if you want or, just enjoy this time together as a family.
So little Lucas arrives, beautiful little Lucas arrives, and he's healthy and he's happy. And so there's the three of you. There's Dave, there's Ella, there's Lucas. How do you get home now? You're in Broome and you've got this bloody truck.
What
do you do now?
So that was the next debacle. RFDS was amazing and offered to fly us back to Perth, which was super, super nice. But really, I quite like the thought of, you know, coming back home as a family together, travelling together as one. And the way to do that was in the truck. So there's not really too many baby stores in Broome and we're a little bit stuck because we obviously had nothing there with us for Lucas. And at this point, Lucas didn't even have a name. We hadn't thought of any names yet because we were so unprepared. So he was just little fella. And there was a joke going around in the hospital, you know, have you named him yet? Have you named him yet? And Dave, little fella, and myself had the challenge of trying to get home and how we were going to do it in a safe manner. And so Dave on his push bike went out on an adventure in Broome trying to source a baby seat of some sort. And the best his MacGyver skills could come up with was a Bunnings tub. So Dave went out on his push bike to Bunnings in Broome and bought a little black tub to try and sort of replicate what the hospital had. And right. He went to Kmart and bought this oversized blanket and that's what we carried little Lucas
the little
out
fella
in. And yeah, little fella, that's what the little fella came out in from the hospital, was this little black Bunnings tub which was wedged behind the seat safely in the truck. And we did the it was probably about a 24-hour drive all the way back to Perth as one happy family.
Wow. I think that says a little bit about the two of you and your courage and your appetite for the unusual, because I think a lot of others might have said, oh, well, we got ourselves into a bit of a pickle. Here we are, we're in Broome. Why don't we just fly home with the RFDS and, hey, Dave, we'll see you when you eventually come back.
Yeah, no, we never do things the easy way.
First adventure as a family, let's do it. Was that trip uneventful coming back?
It was really nice. Again, we had Luke Coombs on repeat. Little fella seemed to enjoy listening to it. And honestly, he slept so good. We were really, really fortunate. And I just laid down in the back of the truck. Obviously, after having a C-section, you're not supposed to do much. Yeah. So I literally was in my little cocoon in the back of the truck and while Dave drove. And I've never seen Dave drive so cautiously in a truck. It was so sweet. And, you know, he'd look behind every now and then. And when little fella woke up, we'd sort of prop him up so he could take in all the surroundings of the bush and see what he was in store for. We pulled in at Port Hedland, and obviously the drive from Broome to Port Hedland, I think is 8 hours or something. And we were going to reassess things there. So obviously if things didn't really go too well with the drive, we had options. Being in Port Hedland, we could fly home or reassess the situation, but things went quite well. So funnily enough, we picked up another trailer and so we had a load on the back now. and then carried on the drive all the way to Perth. So we made it worthwhile, you know.
And that is a testament to true family businesses. Never miss an opportunity to do some hauling. Yeah,
that's it. You squeeze it all in, squeeze it all in. So, no, we got back to Perth in the evening. I think it was about 9 o'clock at night, and Dave's parents lived two doors down from us, and Margot was absolutely ecstatic to meet the little fella. And I've got this beautiful picture of us arriving in the truck. And, you know, trucks are actually quite high up, so you sit quite high above the ground. And I just remember passing the little fella down to Dave, and then Dave handing him straight to Margot. And, you know, she just had tears and just this beautiful excitement on her face of meeting the little fella for the first time. So it was really, really beautiful, and he's so loved by everyone. We're so lucky.
That's fantastic. What an amazing story. Oh, I love it.
We hope that he's going to have good values and be a hard worker, because you know, just like his dad, that'd be really nice if he could take that with him.
I'm sure he will be. Unfortunately, little fella Lucas isn't there right now. He's over with his grandparents while we're doing this interview, but I wish you and little fella Lucas and also Dave all the very best.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Word of mouth is always the best promotion for a podcast. So if you enjoy this podcast or a specific story, please share with family and friends. If you haven't already, join our Facebook group called the Flying Doctor Podcast Community. And you can also send feedback, questions or comments to me directly at lana.mitchell@rfds.org.au. Donations to support the Royal Flying Doctor Service can always be made through our website at flyingdoctor.org.au. The Flying Doctor Podcast was presented by me, Lana Mitchell, and senior producer is Mandy Coolan. Before I head off, I just want to thank one last time our sponsor and major national partner, Isuzu Ute Australia. Isuzu is committed to supporting the communities in which the RFDS operates, and this podcast would not be possible without their support. To learn more, search Isuzu Ute online.